Hi friends, just before we dive into today's episode, I want to ask a huge favor from you. Would you please consider being a supporter of the Why Catholic podcast? There's four ways you can do this. First, you can become a patron and financially support this podcast. The basic level is $5 a month. To become a patron, go to whycatholic.substack.com/subscribe. Secondly, you can support this podcast by purchasing something from the Why Catholic merch shop on Etsy. Just go to etsy.com/shop/whycatholic. Third, you can also support Why Catholic by sharing episodes with your community. And lastly, you can support Why Catholic by inviting me to come and speak at your next parish event. For more information about that, please send me an email at whycatholic@substack.com. Thank you, friends, for your help. I couldn't do this without you. This past Ash Wednesday, I had the privilege of helping to distribute ashes. In our parish, we set up a table in the back of the nave, and as people entered, we did a short liturgy with them, which included readings, prayer, a blessing, and of course, the giving of ashes. Since I was dressed in a cassock and surplice, there were many people who thought I was the priest and addressed me as Father. Being in Park City, Utah, a popular tourist destination, many who came to get ashes were visitors to the area, so they of course didn't know. But there were also quite a number from the area who called me Father because they hadn't been to church in years. In fact, there were a couple of people who started off by saying, "It's been X number of years since I was last here." Whenever someone said that, I said, "Oh my goodness, welcome home. It's so good to have you back." That day, being at the church from the 8 a.m. Mass until 8 in the evening was really eye-opening for me. I saw lots of people in tears that day, and I couldn't help but get the distinct impression that Ash Wednesday for them was this momentous event, a new beginning where they were mustering up a commitment to make the journey back home to God. In fact, the very next Sunday, I was opening the door for people and welcoming them. One woman said, "You said to me, welcome home, and so here I am. Is it okay if I wear this? I just came from my work cleaning houses." I smiled and said, "We're just glad you're here. Come inside. Welcome home." Hi, this is Justin Hibbert, and you're listening to Why Catholic, my podcast about the what and why of Catholicism. Since episode 83, we've been talking about the nature of God, focusing on his unity, his capability to surpass time and space, his personality, and his desire to have a relationship with us. Today, I want to focus on God as Father. In the Gospels, Jesus referred to God as Father nearly 175 times. It's curious, isn't it? There are times he called God, God, most notably on the cross when he said, my God, why have you forsaken me? But it seems that his favorite title for God was Father. In fact, there are a number of times he prays in public addressing God as Father. One instance that comes to mind is when Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead in John 11. Just before calling Lazarus out of the tomb, he said, quote, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me," end quote. It's almost like he's purposefully making a point of referring to God as Father in front of the crowds. Of course, probably the most famous reference to God as Father is the prayer that Jesus taught us, "Our Father, who art in heaven." The question I want to ask is why? Why does Jesus make it a point to emphasize God as Father? Paragraph 239 of the Catechism of the Catholic Church states, quote, "By calling God Father, the language of faith indicates two main things, that God is the first origin of everything and transcendent authority, and that he is at the same time goodness and loving care for all of his children. God's parental tenderness can also be expressed by the image of motherhood, which emphasizes God's immanence, the intimacy between creator and creature. The language of faith thus draws on the human experience of parents, who are in a way the first representatives of God for man. But this experience also tells us that human parents are fallible and can disfigure the face of fatherhood and motherhood. We ought therefore to recall that God transcends the human distinction between the sexes. He is neither man nor woman, he is God. He also transcends human fatherhood and motherhood, although he is their origin and standard. No one is father as God is father," end quote. A couple of episodes ago, I mentioned my friend who always saw the God of the Old Testament as this gruff, stern kind of being. But after doing the Bible in a Year program with Father Mike Schmitz, he was struck by the patience of God. I imagine that Jesus was well aware of how people perceived God during his day, and I imagine that there were lots of people who had the same impression of God as my friend had. One time I was at a marching band awards dinner for my girls, and one of the moms of another marching band member came up to me and said, "Don't say anything to my daughter, but she is terrified of you." I was like, "What? Why is she terrified of me?" I'm not sure I had ever said two words to that girl, and I'm not exactly an intimidating guy. I'm 5'7" tall with a dad bod. Maybe it's my beard, I don't know. Some months later, we ended up taking this girl home from the competition, and I tried to do everything to come off as soft-spoken and friendly. As humorous as it was to have a teenage girl terrified of me, I'd rather that people find me approachable than fear me. Insert Michael Scott's famous quote from the show The Office.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
As I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, one of the common misconceptions is that the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament are two very different gods. But that's impossible if we believe in one God. What is skewed is our perception of God, and I think this is exactly why God became human and came to earth. He wanted us to see God for who he really was, and so he came uncomfortably close to us. It's kind of like how I wanted to change that girl's perception of me, and in order to do that, she had to take an uncomfortable hour-long car ride with me. There's this powerful story Jesus tells, the parable of the prodigal son. It's a story about a boy who says to his father, "Dad, I want to go out and live my life. Give me my inheritance and let me go." So the father agrees, and the boy squanders everything. Before long, he's completely destitute and tending to some pigs and eating their slop. Finally, he comes to his senses and says, "I want to go home, but I'm so ashamed. I've wasted my entire inheritance. Maybe what I'll do is go back and beg my father to allow me to be a servant." And so the boy makes his journey towards his long-lost home. But when the boy was a long way off, his father sees him. He's filled with compassion. He runs to him. He wraps his arms around him and then throws him a huge party. We call this the story of the prodigal son, but really that's a misnomer. It should be called the parable of the running father. Some weeks ago, the gospel reading was about Jesus healing a demon-possessed man and then casting the demons into a herd of pigs who then ran off a cliff and died. There are so many very odd things about that story that compel me to read between the lines. First, on the way to the Gerasenes, Jesus and the disciples encounter this really huge storm on the Sea of Galilee, and I can't help but think that maybe Satan was doing his best to keep Jesus from getting there to heal the demon-possessed man. Then after Jesus heals the man, he and his disciples just get back in the boat and leave. It's like Jesus went all that way and endured a near shipwreck in a terrifying storm just to heal that one man, that crazy guy that the town had tied up because they didn't know what to do with him. But then there's the other weird part about Jesus casting out the demons and sending them into a herd of pigs. Why? Well, this is purely speculation, but I'd like to think that up there, on those cliffs, was a boy who had squandered everything, who was wallowing in slop as a pig farmer, and he needed something to help him come to his senses. Then all of a sudden, his herd became crazy and ran off a cliff, and that's what he needed to see how far gone he was and to start the journey home. Is that what happened? I don't know, but I'd like to imagine that it did. I think we fear God most when we are far from him. We convince ourselves that either we are too far gone to be useful to God and wanted by him, or we deflect our responsibility and place the blame on God and accuse him of being mean. I hate the times I have to discipline my children, but on many occasions, the discipline has turned into this tender moment of contriteness. I had one instance recently with my son where he was being particularly rebellious, and it seemed like we were in this never-ending cycle of rebellion and consequences, more rebellion, which led to more consequences, followed by more rebellion. And then all of a sudden, after a day that left me completely exhausted and deflated, he sat down and opened his heart up in this tender moment of contriteness. He voluntarily confessed to things that I didn't know about, and I just sat there and listened as he bore open his soul. When he finished, I gave him the biggest hug and told him how proud I was of him and how much I loved him. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to confession, reluctantly and embarrassed, and how many times I've walked out with a sense that God the Father has just run a mile to embrace me. I feel sad that there are so many Christians out there who don't practice the sacrament of confession. It's utter poverty. Psalm 51:17 says, quote, "The sacrifice acceptable to God is a broken spirit. A broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise," end quote. And as a father who has had those tender moments of discipline with my children, I understand exactly what this verse means. The night after Ash Wednesday, I woke up with this strong premonition that I should write this letter to all of those who came to get ashes, particularly those who had been away from their home. And here's what I wrote. "Dear prodigal son or daughter, Ash Wednesday was a crucial, life-changing day for you, a day that took courage and resolve. You decided to come home. You've been away at times so far away that it felt like you could never come back. Yet you said, 'This year, I want to come home, and maybe, just maybe, I'll make it there.' On the second or third or fourth or some random day of Lent, your mind will tell you that this is futile or impossible. You will feel like the journey home is far too daunting and overwhelming. Coming home will feel desperately hopeless. When that day comes, and it will, you need to know something incredibly important. You are already home. You've already arrived. In fact, the very second you said, 'I want to come home,' you took those first steps. You were there, and your father had his arms wrapped around you." You see, when Jesus told us the story of the prodigal son, he never told us how far the son had traveled once he came to his senses and began his return trip home. He merely said, "While the son was still a long way from home, the father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him." Quite possibly, the son had taken no more than two steps toward his father's house when his father sprinted the rest of the way to embrace him. "But it feels like I'm still a million miles away," you'll say to yourself. You need to understand that you're not. You are home. It just doesn't feel like home yet because you've long tried to convince yourself that everywhere outside of your family's house is where you belong. Remember how restless you were in all of those other places. You made homelessness your place for so long that it feels foreign to actually be home and at rest. But you are home. And once you give yourself permission to realize that, you will begin to adjust to living like you are home rather than living like you are homeless. Remember this, beloved child. On Ash Wednesday, you didn't just decide to start coming home. Your father met you on the way and threw a party to celebrate your return. That was the day you arrived home. Thank you for joining me for Why Catholic. Be sure to subscribe to Why Catholic wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also subscribe to my Substack site and get the next episode in your email inbox. As a subscriber, you get a special discount code to the Why Catholic Etsy store. If you've been blessed by this podcast and you're feeling generous, there's also a way to financially support it, and patrons get some extra perks. To become a free subscriber or a patron, just go to whycatholic.substack.com/subscribe. Also join me on Instagram at Why Catholic Podcast, all one word. Thanks again for listening. My name is Justin Hibbard, and this is Why Catholic. God bless you.